ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 86 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I've got a great interview this week with an up-and-coming creator in comics, Matt Kent, probably best known for Mind Management, but who's also writing the backup in Justice League of America, among other great things. He's written a lot of interesting stuff, and I'm sure you'll be interested in what he has to say. Then everything wraps up with Gianluca Glaser joining me to discuss news and previews. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Okay, I'm talking today with Matt Kent, the creator of Mind Management and writer of such good things as The Backup and Justice League of America. Oh, many other good things. They're lots of fun. Used to do Frankenstein Agent of Shade for a little while. You do all kinds of good and interesting books. Matt, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good, good. I thought we would start off by talking about Mind Management, because that's the one that, if anybody knows your name, they seem to relate you to that. And it's just a crazy book, I have to say. I was searching for some way to describe it. I just can't think of it. I did want to say, though, that one of the things that makes it really scary is the fact that they're not wearing long johns, that all these special abilities are associated with a more realistic setting. So how did you come up with the idea for Mind Management?
I guess I came up with the title first, which is a first for me. Usually I come up with a story your characters and then write the book, and then I kick around title ideas or something occurs to me along the way. But with Mind Management, the title came first, and it just sort of suggested all this stuff to me, like, you know, different ways and sorts of mind powers and how they can manifest themselves and different kinds of training you could do. And so just sort of it all came from the title.
So how did you come up with the title then?
I stole it from a friend. How's that?
Oh, did you?
No, I told him I would always give him credit, but he was actually writing this epic novel that was sort of like a reaction to my graphic novel Super Spy. So he was doing sort of a funny version of Super Spy. And in this book, in the middle of it, these goofy spies start taking these different classes in espionage. And one of the classes they take is called Mind Management. So I'm reading his book and giving him notes and things on it. And then when I was done, I was like, the best part of this book is that they took a class called Mind Management. And he's like, what are you talking about? He didn't remember writing it. So I was like, okay, if you don't remember writing it, I get that. I get to keep it. So he let me have it, and then that's where everything came from.
That's pretty cool, because you've got a lot of different things going on, and one of the things about the book, and I noticed a lot of people, not just me, notice this, is that you've chalked so much story into a book. I mean, you've got stories going on sometimes on the side of panels. You've got sometimes the inner cover has a thing going on, and it rolls over to the back cover. All kinds of stuff. You've got to really be paying attention as you go through the comic. So I just think that's a great thing. Also, I like the way that you do this. Like, it almost looks like it's some kind of a report. You've got like blue. If you've ever seen the way that some publications are done, there's like a blue outline, and you have to fit everything within the blue lines and stuff like that. And we've got that in this book as well. It looks like it's been photographed that way. How did you come up with all these ideas to put this in the book?
Well, you know, I started with the core idea, which is the main story, and then as I was putting it together, it's the first monthly book I've done. So going in, I was like, oh, okay, I'll just approach this like I approach my graphic novels. And I realized that was a kind of a mistake, because one of the things is I don't read monthly books anymore, or I didn't at the time, you know, when I was starting this. And I was trying to figure out why I didn't do it. And the reasons why I didn't do it ended up sort of forming Mind Management in a way. A few of the things are, you know, it's $4 for an issue. It takes me 10 minutes to read a comic, like the average, you know, 20-page comic or 24-page comic. And it wasn't worth it to like trudge into this shop every week or once a month to get a few comics that were going to take me half an hour to read and cost me like $20. So the long answer is that I'm like, well, how do we fix that? You know, like I remember when I was a kid, I'd go to the comic shop, I'd go to the grocery store and pick comics off the spinner rack, and it'd be like X-Men or Daredevil or something. And I remember spending like a month pouring over it and reading it and rereading it. And one of the things you notice about those older books, like from the 70s and 80s, is they're really dense, you know. I don't think they hold up you know, today, like, as a completely entertaining read, just because they're kind of overwritten. You know, most of the time there's a lot of words. But I want to sort of try to capture that again. It's like, get people, you know, that maybe used to do that and don't do it anymore, made for trade paperbacks, to show them how comics can still be good as a 24-page book, you know, like, sort of suck people back into the store every week and get them eager to wait for that next installment, you know, just like I did when I was 10.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's pretty cool because I think you do that quite well. There's a lot of things going on, and you really have to pay attention. You're right in that some books I can whip through in 5 minutes that comes out these days. But yours, I can't do that. I have to put myself into it. I have to kind of stop everything else that I'm doing, get my head into the story, and read everything going on. And sometimes I got to tilt the book sideways to read the. There's a little story called a premeditated going on the sideways of issue number 8 that came out recently. And so I've got to be paying attention and reading. And I'm never quite sure, should I read one thing all the way through, or should I read little bits as I move forward? You know, should I read the drawings first and then go back and read the typed out stuff and then read the cover and stuff? I'm never quite sure where to start, so that's always a challenge to me.
Yeah, that's funny. I like talking to people that read it too, because everybody sort of reads it in a different way. And some people read the story and then go back and read the side text. Some people read the page and then the side text all the way through, alternating. But no, it's cool. Hopefully, it works no matter which way you do it.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool because it is something unusual in comics, and I like that. It's one of the things that really appealed to me. The other thing that really appealed to me, too, is the notion of the abilities, particularly the mental ones. The mental ones are kind of scary. You know, if you had people with these abilities, and that's another thing I enjoy in the books, is that you will explain who some of the agents are. Sometimes there'll be like a backup towards the end of a book. You'll have like the Hulk is going on currently. Is it not Bruce Banner? It's a different kind of a character.
Yeah.
You had the one guy who's able to shoot people because he has absolutely no compassion for anybody, which I thought was really interesting. So you're explaining these stories, and then when we see the characters in the story, like we got to see, I can't remember the name of the guy who doesn't feel any compassion.
Yeah. Well,
what's his name?
Boy, put me on the spot, why don't you? The Sniper. Let's call him the Sniper. I think that's my nickname.
The Sniper, yeah. He's just, he shows up in the book, and I gasp because I thought, oh, my goodness. He's there for one purpose and one purpose only, and that's to kill.
Yeah.
And not feel badly about it, too. So when we see these people after we've paid attention and read the books, it's really kind of a nice thing that you don't have to stand there and say, okay, now people who have read this book before will remember that this is the Sniper, and the Sniper is this. You understand that we've read the book, and we know who these are. And I always appreciate when somebody treats me with some intelligence that I actually did remember these people.
Yeah, no, I like that too. I hate recaps, you know.
Now, the basic characters, of course, we've got the woman. She writes a very successful novel, and then after that, she can't seem to be able to write another one. She sinks down afterwards, and we come to find out a lot of her story, what's going on with that. When you had the idea for this, did you plan her stuff this way, or has this kind of spilled out as you've been writing it?
Yeah, definitely. The whole series is pretty much planned, you know. So right now, my outline goes to 36 issues. So in issue 36, the main storyline will end. And I didn't really want to start this big thing without knowing where it was going or what was going to happen to everybody. And it's just not the way I approach anything. Like, I kind of approach it as a really giant graphic novel split into chapters that need to work independently. I know where it's going. You know, every once in a while, things will change. I'll get a new idea. I'll add something or change something a little bit. But yeah, but the big strokes and the main characters and everything, all of that's already determined.
See, Lyme is such a great character, the guy who is able to control the emotions of people around him. I've always wondered, you know, he makes me think about actors. If you're an actor and you can emote and it doesn't necessarily mean it's genuine, how can you trust people around you? And if you're around other actors, how do you know if they actually like you or not? So I saw a lot of this kind of a trouble in Lyme's character. You know, how can he possibly ever know if anybody actually likes him or not? Because if he likes somebody, then they should automatically like him back.
Yeah, I think it's sort of heightened a sense of that in the comic or whatever, but I think everybody sort of deals with that anyway. Like, in your relationships, it's like, you're always trying to gauge, like, does this person like me? You know, and when you're in a relationship, it's like, there's always that sort of, like, thought in the back. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just paranoid. But I'm like, do you like me, or are we just here because it's convenient? You know, that kind of thing. But yeah, so I just thought that was kind of a double-edged sword, too, where you have this ability to affect people and make people happy. But then at the same time, you know, always doubting whether people are genuinely happy or not.
Yeah. Well, he approaches people, and he has a wife at one point, and the two, he gets into an argument with her because he doesn't believe that she truly loves him, that he believes that she's been influenced by him, and therefore he can't really trust her. Again, this goes back to the actor analogy to me. If you're an actor, it must be so easy just to fall into acting and to do these kinds of things and never really trust anybody to really like you. So that's what makes me think about her. The Lime character is the one, seems to me, around which the story twists and turns. I like the girl. She's reacting, and we come to find out that she's related to Lime, which was a big surprise to me. You know, I was very surprised about all that good stuff. So that's one of the great things I like about this, is that every book has some significant movement going on in the storyline, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, thanks. I've sort of split the series in the story arc, so like every six issues it's going to sort of shift a little bit, and then the stories are going to sort of focus on a slightly different character, or like a character from a different angle. I didn't say that Maru was related to Lime, by the way, too. I don't want that to get out there.
Oh, you didn't?
I'm going to say that's not exactly true, maybe.
Well, if you've got people who control other people's minds, how can you believe anything?
Yeah, that's true. Oh, that's the other thing. I get a lot of emails where people are like, is this a dream? Are they going to wake up and that kind of thing? I'm like, that's the worst kind of story to me. So I can definitely promise you that nobody's waking up from a dream and it was all, you know, in somebody's head for the most part. I think 99% of the story is, you know, real to whatever extent that means.
Well, sometimes I think there'll be some manipulation of minds going on, or you got to have that in this kind of a book. I also like the organization, mind management itself. We keep learning things about that, and, you know, you show historically how the organization went from one section to another and how things developed. There's so many different little things going on. I love a story that has lots of things for me to pay attention to, and that's what I like about mind management particularly. I must pay attention, and I love TV shows that do that to me, and I love comics that do that to me. If somebody isn't reading mind management, I really hope that they will pick it up, because boy, you will get engaged pretty quickly.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, hopefully every issue is something you can't just read once.
Well, one other thing I always like to, you know, like I said about the blue on the outside, how do you create that in the comic? Do you shoot these? I mean, are these, how do you get that effect in the comic book? You don't have to redo those every month, do you? Or do you actually have like a template that you put that onto and then put your story in that?
I mean, it's not too difficult. My process is everything's ink and watercolor on just watercolor paper. And so I paint everything and then use ink for the lines and then scan it in. And then everything after that is all Photoshop. So like all the blue lines and the texture paper in the background, all that stuff is done afterwards. But yeah, if you look at my original art, it's plain white watercolor paper with ink and watercolor.
It's interesting to me because I always think that's a lot of effort to do that, but I guess you're saying it's not.
No, it is a lot. I didn't say it wasn't. It's still a lot of effort. No, I mean, it is, you know, I'm basically doing a monthly comic on my own, and so it's definitely not, like, easy, which is something I'm figuring out.
Well, it looks to me like it takes a lot of effort to create this book. I mean, tilting the text sideways in certain places, front and back page stuff going on. It's just an amazing, amazing book. I just think it's so much fun to read. And you know, you talk about mind management. You call it mind engagement because you're engaging our minds as we read it on a lot of different levels. And I really enjoy the book a lot. I think it's great.
Great. Yeah, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Well, why don't we talk about some of the other stuff that you're doing? You did mention you're working on the backup stories for Justice League of America. Jeff Johns and David Fincher are doing the front, and you're doing the Martian Manhunter part in the back. Frankly, I think the Martian Manhunter is a perfect choice for you to write.
He's
a telepath.
It's funny because I've kind of liked that character for a long time, but everyone always asks me too. They're like, "What character? If you could write a character in DC Universe, what would you write?" I'm like, I don't know, like. To me, it's not about, you know, liking one over another. I think all of those characters have like a really crazy story that could be told. And so to me, you could pick one, you know, and there's a good story there. So other than sort of my nostalgia factor for some like the original Justice League and that kind of thing, I like it all. So, but yeah, when I got into Martian Manhunter, I'm like, well, he can basically be like the super, super, super spy or whatever of the DC Universe. So I'm kind of taking that approach with sort of the alien twist to it that he's, you know, he's sort of this lost soul of an alien.
Well, it's interesting because Martian Manhunter's always struggled over the years because he's just like, to most people, he's just a green Superman. If you've ever watched the Justice League cartoon series that Bruce Timm and Paul Dini did, they had Superman would fly up and Martian Manhunter would go down into the ground. And I always thought they really worked hard to make the difference between the two stand out. And of course, Martian Manhunter looked like a Area 52 kind of alien instead of the way that he's looked in the past. Just a great big huge hulking forehead. Are you going to approach the Martian Manhunter more as an alien, or is he trying to become a part of human society? Which aspect of Martian Manhunter going forward do you think is going to is something you want to deal with?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the thing that is interesting to me about him is that struggle to be, you know, he's basically Superman, even in his origin in a way where he's sort of the last of his kind or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so him struggling with that along with, you know, visually he doesn't fit in with society and Earth necessarily. So that all that stuff is interesting to me. And really, like, he's just like Superman in that he's super strong. He has all these crazy powers. He's basically indestructible. But he wasn't raised by humans. So right. To me, that's going to be the key right there to me, is that Clark Kent had Ma and Pa Kent to sort of form him. So even though he's technically an alien, he was all but born here and then was raised by humans. So he's always going to be connected to us in an easier way. Where Martian Manhunter is not, you know, and they're going to let me sort of get into his origin. I've started doing that now. I'm really going to expose that difference and then how that makes him different.
That was going to be my next question. Are you going to be able to deal with his origin? Because I've read comics for a long, long time, and I remember how he got sort of transported here by an Earthling, and then the Earthling promptly dies and leaves him unable to go back to Mars. Are you going to update that for, like, how we look at things today?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to do it in a way that's sort of respectful to the past and sort of the, you know, everybody that's worked on that character before, but also, you know, with the New 52, they're really wanting you to just tell a good story. So I'm going to take some of those elements and not take others and just try to tell a really good story. Try to be true to that, you know, the base of that character, what he's about. And but yeah, they're going to let me get into the origin. Issue 3 of Justice League of America, I think, is you start to get a little glimpse of where he's from and stuff.
Because he used to be part of Stormwatch, and for a while he was actually in the group, and then all of a sudden he just sort of left. Was that in preparation for Justice League of America?
I guess so. You know, I didn't have much to do that. I know that I talked to Jim Starlin, and he's got some crazy stuff playing for Stormwatch. And I don't know. I'm not sure what I can say or anything, you know.
Okay, well, yeah, don't get in trouble. I don't want you to get in trouble.
Yeah, no, I just, anyways, but yeah, I don't know what to say.
Okay, well, I guess what we need to buy to find out what's going on and read them, so that's always a good way to go about it. Now, you've done some other books over the years, and one of the ones I enjoyed was Pistol Whip, which was a graphic novel. That was a very different graphic novel. It was pretty much black and white, and I understand you're good friends with Jeff Lemire.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you and he kind of have a lot of similarities in some of the ways that you do things. I think your art kind of resembles his art, and your stories are kind of something along the way. It's always something a little off-center to me. He tends to write about families a lot more, and that seems to be the basic underpinning for what his stories are. Is there anything that you kind of think that this is where you like to start from and go from there? I don't think you want to deal with families as much as Jeff might. Is there some aspect of things that appeals to you, and that's where you like to begin and move on from there?
I think you're starting to get into like the theme of things. And I, honestly, when I start a book or story or anything, I don't think about, I really want to explore like family or relationships or any of that stuff. That doesn't even occur to me, honestly.
Okay.
You know, I go into story, like when I did Pistol Whip or when I did Super Spy, like I start a story in the most simple, direct way. And it's, what's it like to be a spy? You know, what would that really be like? And then, okay, well, now what if I was a single mother, what would it be like to be?
Okay, that's interesting because everybody approaches this thing differently, and that's what makes things good for me as a reader. I like variety in what I read, and so you provide a different perspective than, say, like Jeff does or Scott Snyder does or all these different people. It's such a great thing in comics today because we're getting a lot of different perspectives and a lot of different approaches to things, and I really enjoy that. I like being able to pick up Mind Management, and I'm looking forward to what you're going to do with Martian Manhunter and things because this is going to be something I haven't seen before, and I like that. I've read some stories 100 times, and I'm looking forward to seeing some other stories being told, and I'm looking forward to that from you as well.
Yeah, no, and I have to give credit to the editors at DC for being a little more open, you know, searching for new voices and stuff, like the stuff they've been letting Jeff do and Scott, and they're letting me get in there now. It's great, you know, it's kind of a good atmosphere to be in and to write in and sort of play with these characters we all grew up with, but You know, there's only so many stories you can tell. And then if you're telling them with the same characters every time, it does get repetitive. But getting some kooky characters into the DC office or whatever is making it a little more interesting, I think.
Well, one of the things, like when they had Flashpoint, they had, and I'm a big Batman fan. I've read Batman as long as I've been reading. And there was a, they had, in Flashpoint, it was Bruce Wayne that gets killed, and the father, Thomas Wayne, becomes Batman. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out who the Joker was. And well, I happened to hear the discussion afterwards, well, how this process came to be. They made Martha Wayne the Joker. Which shocked the heck out of me when I read that. And they were asking, and the writer comes and says, well, can I make Martha Wayne the Joker? And I say, okay, yeah. I said, really? You mean that? And he goes, yeah, you can do that. And this is not going to last forever. You can do whatever you'd like with it. And that, just as a Batman fan, I had never conceived of that in all the years I've read Batman. And so this is the kind of stuff that you do. You bring in aspects of things that I haven't considered. And I like that. I like to have my mind pushed around in different directions. So this is why I so many good things are going on. I think the New 52 has been a great thing. I'm glad you're a part of it, because I think you bring a different perspective than what I'm used to. And I'm really anxious to dive into that, you know, and really get to explore it.
Yeah, no, I'm glad. And that's the thing, is like, I'm not coming from a place where I think a lot of people think, well, you know, if you're an indie guy or something, you're like, you're just coming in, you're going to script character, do whatever you want to do. And that's not the place I come from. Like, I grew up reading this stuff, so I definitely have a healthy respect for the characters and the history, and I like it. And at the same time, I'm a grown adult with and I want to be creative, so I'm going to take that stuff and sort of, in a way, I feel like I'm collaborating with everybody that's ever worked on the character. So I don't want it to be so different that you don't recognize who they are, but at the same time, yeah, just kind of have fun with it, and I'm definitely having fun.
That's cool. I think it shows, and as I read it, it just comes through that you are putting your unique spin on it, although I think you're right, you're very respectful of what's happened before. And that's not always an easy balance to strike, so I really appreciate that. Now, I do have to ask you, I told you who my favorite character in comics is. Do you have a favorite comics character over the years that you've gravitated towards?
I have different favorites for various reasons, you know, like, oh boy, I think Wonder Woman is awesome, but I think it's only because I feel like she's the hardest character to write in the DCU, like as far as getting it right and getting something, you know, really neat done with her, you know. And I like what Brian Azzarello is doing now. I think is maybe doing sort of a definitive Wonder Woman. Like the definitive Wonder Woman that stands the test of time. I love it. So I think Wonder Woman is one I'd like to take a crack at. And then who else? I think Daredevil. I grew up, some of my first comics were Frank Miller's Daredevil, so I'm always going to have a soft spot for that guy.
Mm-hmm. As a writer and an artist, do you prefer to write and not draw? Do you prefer to do both? Are there times when you prefer to draw and not write?
Yeah, you know, it's a complex question. The short answer is I love writing and drawing, and this is the only job that lets me do both. So if I'm I think this just applies to like my creator-owned stuff. Like if it's something that my idea, my character, then I want to draw it, you know. But when I'm doing stuff, work for hire, you know, I'm doing some stuff for Marvel and DC now too. When I go into that, I know that I'm not drawing it ahead of time, so I can sort of flip a switch and be like, oh, okay, I'm the writer on this, and let's see what the artist can do. And so I just sort of go into collaborative mode and write a script, and then I try not to be too hands-on with the artist, just because I think part of collaborating is sort of letting them add something to it or bring something to it, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. see what they can do. And so then there's a little bit of back and forth there, which I also enjoy. So it just depends. And I'll say that the writing is definitely way easier. No offense to writers. I'm a writer, so I can say that. But it's definitely, it's not that it's easier. It's just that the time commitment, you know, like I can write a script, you know, in a day or two, and then it's going to take an artist like 2 weeks to draw it. So, and I know how that is too.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I talked to Phil Hester, and he's like you, he does writing and drawing both, or he can do either. And he always says people either want him to write or draw, but he was so happy. The thing that made him the happiest when I talked with him last was that he was going to get to write and draw something. And he was so looking forward to that, being able to go back to that again. So I guess it's just you're completely engaged. It's your book, you know, when you do that. And that's kind of a neat thing. What other projects are you working on? Are there any other things that we should know about that you have coming down the pike that we should keep an eye out for?
Well, the Mind Management first collection, hardcover collection, got out in April, first week of April. And then I did a book for First Second called Red Handed, which is a crime book, which is when I was working on that graphic novel, I was like, oh, this is my first crime book. And then I realized, well, Pistol Whip is kind of a crime book. but that was my first book 10 years ago. So I'm sort of revisiting the crime genre with this new book. It's coming out in May. So it's been kind of interesting because Pistol Whip was my first book, and now Red Handed, 10 years later, is sort of my unconscious reply to that first book in a way, like my thoughts on the crime genre.
Cool. Who's putting that out?
First Second.
Who's printing Red Handed?
First Second. They're owned by McMillan. They publish trying to think what other big books they've done. They've done a ton of books, but yeah, they're kind of the bigger publishers.
Okay, I'm not familiar with them, but I'll have to keep my ear to the ground. Do those come out through regular bookstores, or will they be part of something you'll have to get through Amazon?
Yeah, no, it's regular bookstores. So they're like a sub group of Macmillan, so it's a big publisher.
Oh, cool. We don't have nearly enough publishers, I don't think, so that's kind of neat. Is it going to be available digitally, do you know?
I don't think so. It's coming out in hardcover in May, but you'll be able to get it like anywhere, Barnes & Noble and Amazon.
Oh, cool. Okay. Anything else we should know about?
That's about it. I'm hard at work on the latest issue of Mind Management.
Okay. Well, very good. Good to talk with you, Matt. You have a nice perspective on it, and I'm looking forward to reading your stuff for a long time to come. So I wish you much success, and I just hope it goes really, really well for you.
Yeah, great. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
It's time for this week's news and previews, and with me as always is Gianluca Glaser. How are you doing today, Gianluca? I know you got a cold.
I do have a bit of a cold.
I hope you feel better soon. We'll do this and I'll get you back to recovery mode here before long.
Now on Major Spoilers.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
That's pretty nice. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with them. They're very nice folks, and it's nice to have a little bit of a wider audience to talk to, so kind of neat. Okay, why don't we go ahead and why don't you tell us the news that you'd like to talk about?
Sure, absolutely. So, Diamond has announced the initial figures for March 2013 comic book and graphic novel sales.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like Marvel has been gaining the lead over DC even more than usual.
Mm-hmm.
For the retail market share, the dollars, Marvel has 39.96% of the market share, while DC has dipped below 30% with 27.09%. When it comes to actual units, Marvel surpasses them even more with 43.78%, while DC has 29.88%. So it looks like the Marvel Now and now the Age of Ultron, all these kinds of things have, surpassed DC as far as retailer orders.
Yeah, they had also a big success in Guardians of the Galaxy #1, I understand.
That's which true.
I'll surprised
me. That in a minute.
Okay.
Compared to the previous month, February, comic books were up 3% roughly in both dollars and units, while graphic novels were up 7.77% in dollars and a whopping 17% in units moved. And compared to March last year, comics were up a whopping 26.28% in dollars and 21.43% in units, while graphic novels also saw an increase, 14.33% in dollars and 7.78% in units.
Mm-hmm.
So, even though Marvel is kind of taking a bigger lead over DC, overall, book sales have been up, in general.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, those top 10 books, in regards to that, Guardians of the Galaxy is #1. Mm-hmm. We don't know the final units that were sold yet. Mm-hmm. Followed by Age of Ultron #1, Batman #18, mm-hmm. Wolverine #1, Age of Ultron #2, Justice League #18, Age of Ultron #3. This book came out 3 issues in 1 month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Followed by The Superior Spider-Man #5, Justice League of America #2, and then rounding out the top 10, All New X-Men #8.
Mm-hmm.
So of those books, basically three of them were DC, mm-hmm. and obviously 7 of them were Marvel, with 3 of those being Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
over in the graphic novel section, Batman was dominant with the hardcover for Volume 2, The City of Owls, was number 1. And then Batman trade paperback version of Volume 1, The Court of Owls, right afterwards. Marvel shows up with Hawkeye trade paperback Volume 1. Then you have Avatar The Last Airbender. No big surprise, number 5 is The Walking Dead, Volume 1 trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have your Avengers versus X-Men, and then two Kick-Ass books. The Kick-Ass 2 trade paperback, and I guess a special edition, the Kick-Ass 2 Prelude Hit Girl Premium Hardcover Edition.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Saga from Image Comics making an appearance at number 9, and then Earth 2 hardcover from DC.
Yeah, I love Earth 2. I think that's a great book. Last week we talked about the fact that there's a new Batman coming to Earth 2, so that should kind of help Earth 2 along, I think.
Yeah.
So what do you think about is in the future? I mean, when Age of Ultron's only got, what, several more issues to go, not terribly many. Do you think that that's going to – it's supposed to make a change in the Marvel Universe.
Sure.
Do you think all that's going to keep Marvel in the lead?
Well, Marvel's going to have plenty of more events going on. They're going to do one for Superior Spider-Man in July. There's going to be a Spider-Man event. So, I mean, they're kind of out-eventing DC.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, like I said, I don't care for events. You know, it's a cheap marketing ploy. Sell more books. You know, most people think it should be content over gimmicks. Mm-hmm. But, you know, guess what? Gimmicks and multi-covers, you know, sell.
Mm-hmm. So
people do it.
Yep.
Over in movie news, speaking of Marvel, Zoe Saldana is in talks to play Gamora for Guardians of the Galaxy, according to the Hollywood Reporter. Mm-hmm. If she chooses to sign on, and hopefully she will join director James Gunn, wrestler-actor Dave Bautista, who's playing Drax, and Chris Pratt as Star-Lord.
Mm-hmm. What's your take on how that movie's going
to
do?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, the full cast hasn't come together yet, but it's not part of the regular, you know, Avengers universe for Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
It could be really big. It could be really bad. It's hard to say at this point.
Okay.
What do you feel?
I'm kind of thinking this is going to be the lowest of the bunch.
Really?
It's an unknown quantity. You've also got Ant-Man, which I think is going to go low. They're taking chances with some of the lesser-known characters.
Sure.
And that's a good thing, but I think they're going to – Ant-Man and I think Guardians of the Galaxy are going to be the lower of the bunches of all the characters.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if the script and direction knock it out of the park, it could be very successful, but – you know, it does have, yeah, less familiarity to it going against it.
Well, it's also got a talking raccoon, which I think not many people are going to go for.
Okay. You never know. We'll see. A couple of interesting Disney Lucasfilm news. LucasArt is shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
I used to love the LucasArt video games in the 90s. You had the Monkey Island series. I used to play Full Throttle as well, too. And all that's coming down to a close as Disney is shutting it down. And also laying off people, too, from Industrial Light Magic. So, really sucky. Lucasfilm is also teaming up with Dark Horse for an adaptation of George Lucas's original draft screenplay of Star Wars. The screenplay is much different than the actual film series that it ended up becoming.
Mm-hmm.
It tells of a star-spanning space opera of Jedi Anakin Starkiller.
Mm-hmm.
You have General Luke Skywalker, the evil Sith Knights, and a 6-foot lizard named Han Solo. Instead of lightsabers, the heroes brandish laser swords. And, you know, Disney is, you know, there's still the rumors that Dark Horse and Disney are going to end up parting ways, or the Star Wars franchise actually is going to be parting ways with Dark Horse.
Yeah.
So it would be a shame if they do. I think it would be a stupid decision, but, you know, at least they're getting some good material out in the meantime.
Well, they've got Marvel now. They own Marvel, and so they're going to move everything over there. Hasn't worked out so well for the animated characters, I have to say that.
I hate you, Disney. You kill LucasArts, you're letting people go from Industrial Light Magic, and now you're going to screw over Dark Horse.
Yeah, Disney is one of the true conglomerates of our time. It owns everything that it can. They're buying and buying. I'm waiting for them to buy more things is what I'm waiting for, so we'll see.
I forgot to mention, this particular version of Star Wars, it's going to be written by Lucas Books executive editor J.W. Rinsler. It's going to be drawn by Vampirella veteran Mike Mayhew. He's really good. It's going to be an 8-issue miniseries that's going to start in September, so not quite a while.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah, it will be, actually. So, in DC news, the evil attorney Mark Toberhoff, he's been given a reprieve from the courts here. He will not have to pay $500,000 in legal fee to DC Comics under a ruling. The fees were requested as part of a broad-ranging litigation over Toberhoff's representation of the heirs. A key ruling went Toberhoff's way back in March, and Thursday's ruling appears to wrap up the case. So, oh well.
Well, DC's got plenty of money. They don't need it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I guess everything is back to the original contract prior to this lawsuit. So how is Batman Incorporated going to be doing without Grant Morrison, you wonder?
Yeah, well, I know the answer to that.
Yes, well, it's not going to be going at all.
That's right.
Because it's going to end with issue number 13. Grant Morrison and Chris Burnham are extending their run to this final 13th issue. And it's going to be the finale. Big one.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and in a way, I'm kind of sorry that he killed off Damian Wayne. You know, everybody's still talking about that. Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting to see. There's some other news that we'll talk about a little bit later about all that. But Grant Morrison, this is what he wanted to do originally, and so now he's done it. And I think he's decided to move on. He's going over to Image. We know we've already seen Happy from Image, so he's going to do. There is a multiversity or something that he's got coming up from DC. I guess that's still going to happen. But as far as other projects, he's not going to do anything for them.
Right. Yeah, he's moving over to create her own work. But one thing, you know, that the press screwed the pooch on is this. Is that the press are a bunch of idiots. They are. The major press, the USA Todays and the Varieties and stuff, they could be fooled easily, you know? It's like everybody writes about Damian dying. Robin's dead. You know, first of all, it's not the first Robin, which I'm sure was news to those guys. Second of all, you know, it's, you know, comic book deaths, you know, are normally not very permanent. He's going to be back within, like, 12 months, trust me. You know, they want to have the Damian Robin back, but they want to create drama and sell books and stuff. But what everybody in the major press ignored is the fact that a real death occurred in the DC universe.
Yep.
And that was an Animal Man.
That was his son, Buddy Baker's son died.
Buddy Baker's son. The blonde hair and big bullet.
Yeah.
And that is a death that, to me, I don't see being reversed.
No.
At all. It's a dramatic point. He's not the kid himself is not a superhero. It's going to create, you know, a lot of drama and stress over for many years for the Baker family. Again, no mention whatsoever by USA Today, Variety, all those people who were just like oohing and aahing over, you know, the Robin's death. And sure, okay, I understand. Batman is a very cultural icon. He's been on television and movies, while Animal Man, even though Grant Morrison gave him his origins, isn't hardly as well known. But this is an actual real death. As opposed to a publicity stunt that is going to have no lasting effect 12 months from now.
If you read Animal Man, you see that they've actually split the family into two. Is that Buddy now is the wife is and the daughter have left him, which will be interesting because the daughter leans more towards the father because she's got more power than he does.
Right.
So this is all going to be an interesting little move forward as we see how the family, you know, interacts after the death. It was a big surprise to me. I didn't expect it at all.
So, yeah. All right. And over in DC News, of course, you know, while we were gone for a while before our return here to Major Spoilers, you know, we had Andy Diggle basically drop out of Action Comics. We even really started. The same goes with Josh Ahel-Fiocco with the Green Lantern books. So, in following up a bit from that, for Action Comics, we're going to have Scott LaBelle and Tyler Kirkham do a fill-in issue on Action Comics number 22. So, Scott currently is also the writer for Superman, so he's going to be holding on to both Superman books at least for 1 month.
Yeah, I wonder what's going on with DC with all this change, you know, it seems like the editorial stuff. According to what happened with Green Lantern, my understanding is the edict came down that Jon Stewart had to be killed. And the writer wouldn't do it, and so he basically resigned over it.
But now they're not getting killed.
Yeah, now that's the thing. Now they're coming back and saying, we're not going to kill him after all.
Right.
And I kind of think, what's DC doing, you know? I don't understand what they're up to.
Sure. Yeah, Joshua Helfiocco is a really talented writer. I was really excited for him to move on from My Vampire into a much more higher profile character.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it ends before it even begins.
Yeah.
And on the heels of Andy Diggle quitting Action Comics.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what's going on over there. Their WTF moment.
Yeah, that wasn't what they had in mind, I don't think.
Yeah. And another piece of DC news is that, you remember who Carrie Kelly is?
Yes.
From The Dark Knight Returns?
Yes.
Yes. Well, she is going to, well, not quite be. I think the cover is a little bit misleading.
Mm-hmm.
But she is going to be involved in the upcoming of Batman.
Yeah.
You know, she was Robin in the Dark Knight Returns, and then in that stinky follow-up book, The Dark Knight Strikes Again, she was Catgirl.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, those storylines take place many, many more years into the future.
Mm-hmm.
When Batman is like in his 60s and is coming out of retirement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure quite what role she's going to play here in the DC universe, but she is now thrust into the DC New 52 verse.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the quote regarding her is, "You'll find out once you crack the book, but she's not exactly the new Robin. But I don't want to spoil the story and her introduction into Bruce Wayne Batman's life." This is a quote from Tomasi.
Mm-hmm.
"In regards to how long she'll be around, let's just say that it's a hell of a lot longer than one issue. I've got plans for Carrie that play well into the future."
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting.
The book she's going to be appearing in, it starts in, is Batman and Red Robin, number 19.
Right.
We've talked previously that since what used to be called Batman and Robin, they're going to change the title
right
each month depending on who's in it. Now, what's interesting is she's a college student instead of being a young kid.
Right.
Which this guy find interesting, and she's supposedly going to talk back to Batman and stuff like that, but we don't know in what role she's going to take, so it's going to be interesting to see. This is clearly, I agree with you, I think Damian Wayne will be back. I always remember the pool he could be dipped in to bring him back, so I would say that this is a kind of a something to this is equal opportunity to have a girl in there for a while until he comes back.
Now, I don't want to spoil things for people, but if she was supposed to be in college, right,
mm-hmm.
When Batman's in his 60s, mm-hmm. how old is Batman now?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? He's in his 40s?
He's supposed to, Batman and Bruce Wayne are supposed to ever be around 30. Five,
yeah,
30.
So should she be in diapers at this point?
Yeah, well, you know, this kind of stuff makes my head hurt, so I don't think about it too much. I just kind of figure, it's comics, these things change.
Sorry to ruin everybody's Carrie Kelly moment there, but, you know, just this whole time issue, so.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there's several Marvel news coming on here. I mentioned before that Superior Spider-Man, they're doing this whole big Spider-Month. In July.
Yeah.
So, following on the heels of Superior Spider-Man is going to be a new ongoing series called The Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
Hmm.
So, of course, this is launching in July during the Superior Spider Month. The Superior Foes of Spider-Man is going to be written by Nick Spencer with art by Steve Lieber, who's worked previously on Detective Comics. It's going to feature a team of lesser caliber bad guys, including Beetle, Overdrive, Shocker, Speed Demon, and Boomerang.
Hmm.
They're kind of wanting to get bigger recognition and move up in the ranks.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other title coming out during this July month is Superior Carnage. It's going to be a 5-issue limited series. It's going to be written by Kevin Shenick, who's written Avenging Spider-Man and Robot Chicken. The art's going to be by Steven Segovia, previously of Extreme X-Men and Thor.
Mm-hmm.
Superior Carnage finds Cletus, quote, Carnage Cassidy, rotting away in prison. However, his fellow inmates have a surprise in store for the sadistic, symbiotic supervillain, namely to build a more dastardly, more sinister, more superior Carnage.
Mm-hmm.
So does that sound interesting to you? I'm kind of over the whole Carnage thing.
Well, I'm kind of over the whole Superior Spider-Man thing, although there's a couple of other things going on that kind of interest me.
Sure.
You were mentioning that some of the other stuff. They're relaunching Avenging Spider-Man as Superior Spider-Man Team-Up Number 1.
Right. Okay.
That's coming out. So what they're going to do is with that. Now, you were mentioning the July event. There's something happening in the July event that interests me. They're giving him a new costume, and they're making other changes to him.
Oh, boy.
So if Superior Spider-Man number 9 is supposed to be a status quo change, new allies, a new look, and an all-new agenda, supposedly.
Right.
And I guess if there's other books coming out, I guess it's selling really well, but I give up on it. I hate to tell you, but the whole business about Dr. Octopus being in there, and then you got to alter his sensibilities so he's more like Peter Parker. And then not only that, you got to put the ghost of Peter Parker kind of haunting him.
Uh-huh.
I guess it's selling well enough that they're going to do all this stuff, but sure. I gave up on it. I sold my very first issue of it on eBay. Didn't get a whole lot for it. I'm not sure how well it's doing, but apparently stores are doing real well with it, so that's good.
That's good, yeah. This will make you happy, though. This bit of news. Over at IDW, the Rocketeer is teaming up with the Spirit for a 4-issue miniseries.
Well, that'll be fun.
And it's going to be written by Mark Wade.
Oh, that'll be cool.
Yeah, with art by Paul Smith.
Mm.
So it comes out this summer, The Rocketeer, The Spirit, Pulp Friction, in July.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Wade's getting a lot of work these days.
Certainly. Absolutely. Both over here at IDW and on Dynamite. As well as Marvel, of course. So, you remember that book last year, Darth Vader Inside?
Yeah.
Well, there's going to be a sequel. Chronicle Books will release Jeffrey Brown's Vader's Little Princess.
Oh, no.
Going to basically deal with Darth Vader raising a Princess Leia.
Mm.
All right. Well, if you like the original one, which sold a lot of copies,
mm-hmm.
I'm guessing this will probably too.
How about that?
All right. Over at Dynamite News, they are bringing back The Owl.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid buying The Owl.
Yeah?
He's a gray costume with an owl ship. He was kind of their Batman.
Right. Yep. From Dell Comics, The Owl was a creature of the night, similar to Batman. He actually debuted in 1940 at Cracker Jack Funnies number 25. So kind of interesting how, you know, somebody who launched that long ago isn't quite as well known overall, though. Compared to, say, Batman.
Yeah, he got relaunched in the 60s, which is where I saw him.
Right.
And I liked the character real well. I, you know, Dynamite's making a habit out of relaunching all these old characters. I guess they're public domain by now. And
right.
So they're doing that. They're doing one of the girl characters just got done and all this other stuff. And Peter Cannon, Thunderbolt, and all these things.
Yeah, all these pulp characters.
Yeah.
You know, in regards to that. The Owl is going to be written by J.T. Kroll. Mm. Art's going to be done by Hubert Kahn, Hubert Kahn Michael. And Alex Ross will, of course, paint many a cover for the book.
As he always does.
Yes. It's going to be, the story is about Nick, the Owl Terry, a stranger in a strange land, having spent the last 50 years lost in an ethereal limbo. He comes back to find a much crueler world, filled with desperation and violence, but remains determined to fight for good, old-fashioned truth and justice.
Hmm. Cool. I'm looking forward to that.
Older Owl.
Yeah. Yeah.
And speaking of returns, there's going to be a return of Astro City. It's going to debut in June from Vertigo by Kurt Busiek and Brett Anderson.
Good.
Again, covers are going to be by Alex Ross. It's going to be about the ambassador will come to Earth and Samaritan and Honor Guard will return. The property was originally from Image Comics in 1995, and then it was later published by Wildstorm up until 2010.
Mm,
and cool. A bit of sad news, longtime Archie and Cracked writer George Clodier has passed away.
Mm-hmm.
He began writing Archie as far back as 1959. And he continued to write up until his death. But his most significant contribution, of course, was being the co-creator of Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Yeah, he probably made a lot of money off of that.
Well, hopefully he did. I don't know if he has the rights, you know, to the... Even though you're a creator, you're working for a work for hire. And this was done in a Archie's Madhouse number 22. And this was back in 1962.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course, yes, we all know her for the animated series, the live action movies. And apparently there's a feature film in development, so.
Wow.
Yes.
How about that?
Yes, very much so. And then, final bit of news, Image Comics has announced a new series called Lazarus. Mm-hmm. It's going to be from Greg Rucka, which I'm always excited about whatever he does,
mm-hmm.
and illustrated by Michael Lark. They previously worked together at Gotham Central.
Yeah.
Lazarus is going to come out June 26th, and it's going to be an interesting science fiction story. Cast in a future dystopian United States where society has embraced a feudal authority and the divisions between the wealthy elite families, vassals, and serfs are brazenly stark. Lazarus is a story of individual protectors called the Lazarus who defend the feudal lords and their families' interests, centering on a young female protagonist known as Forever who serves the influential and prominent Carlyle family. Lazarus number one is not only a tale of her death, but also the revelation surrounding her origins and allegiance to the system. So, there we
go. Interesting.
Yeah. That's it for news on my end. Any interesting stories that you have to share?
Well, one bit of important news happened after I got the previous podcast done, and that was the passing of Carmine Infantino. You drew so many things back in the early days. Both Marvel and DC have come out with statements saying that he was a legend and did a lot of stuff. When I was growing up, read a lot of Infantino. He did Batman and The Flash.
Right.
And he passed at 87. I was so sorry to hear his passing. The good ones are all going. And he just, you know, he did so many wonderful things. He always had a very dynamic style. He and George Tuska, I always thought, had very similar sort of a very vibrant, living kind of feel to it. Some people are very stolid and stable, and he always did something very different. He'd always have boots would be, you know, sagging down and stuff like that instead of always up. He did the elongated man he used to draw, and the elongated man's boots would forever be hanging down, and his gloves would always have, you know, ripples through it and stuff like that. He always drew that so it kind of looked more realistic. And he did so many wonderful things. His influence on comics will be, you know, forever, as far as I'm concerned. He'll always be pointing back to stuff that he's done as an influence for what's going on now. So at the age of 87, you know, we're going to miss Carmine Infantino, one of the greats.
Definitely. Yeah.
One of the greats. Another thing, too, in related news, last week we talked a little bit about the fact that Bruce Timm was leaving the DC animated universe for a time.
I didn't talk about it.
Yeah, you didn't talk. Well, what's your take on that?
Well, he's got some major project coming on that he's working on. So, kind of interested in regards to that.
Well, the series is going on without him. The Superman Unbound is coming out, and then now they've just announced that Flashpoint Paradox, which is going to be based on the Flashpoint series that hit before the New 52 began,
right,
is going to be out. There's going to have Flash. Now, we knew about this a couple months ago. Mr. Conroy was being interviewed, and he was asked, you know, are you going to be doing any Batman again? He said, well, they just signed me up to do something with the Flash.
Sure.
And everybody knew, of course, the moment he said that, we all knew what it was, because the biggest Flash story of the last several years has been Flashpoint. So he's going to apparently be the Batman in there, which will be funny. Of course, the Batman in that series is Thomas Wayne, not Bruce Wayne. Bruce was actually the one shot in Crime Alley, and now it's going to be Thomas Wayne, and of course Martha Wayne was the Joker.
Wow.
Which I loved. So that was that was a wonderful series. I just loved that whole business. So that's going to be coming out on July 30th, and it's going to be called Justice League, The Flashpoint Paradox. So that'll be wonderful stuff. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
good thing. So that'll be good stuff. What did you get a chance to ever read that?
I never did read the Flashpoint series. I never follow any of those major events, except for, I guess most recently I did the Rot World one. But other than that, I usually keep away.
Mm-hmm. Well, the revelation of Martha Wayne as the Joker was a huge shock to me. That was we saw Thomas Wayne, a much older Batman who struggled a lot more than Bruce does. But then when we discovered that, you know, the death of Bruce influenced Martha to become a villain, I thought that was a wonderful bit of stuff.
Yeah.
I just love that. One last bit of news is that Iron Man 3 is now the spots are coming hot and heavy with the Mandarin, the villain, and they have one that just came out, and he's supposedly threatening the USA, and Tony Stark is of course, declaring what a great superhero he is, and so all that's going to be going on. I hope this is better than Iron Man 2. I didn't happen to care for Iron Man 2, but
that was a big disappointment considering the cast involved.
Yeah. So anyway, that'll be out in early May. That's the beginning of a summer full of Man of Steel and Star Trek, all kinds of good things. Yeah. This is going to be another big genre-related summer of movies.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, let's move into the preview section. What books are you looking forward to, Jean-Luc?
Sure, absolutely. For April 17th, Boom Studio has a lot of Adventure Time going on. You have issue number 15 with the A and B covers and then the C and D retailer incentives. And then you have a fourth printing of issue number 1, as well as a third printing of issue number 2, and second printings of issues 3 through 6. Boom also has the Clive Barker Hellraiser, the Dark Watch number 3 on sale, and Nick Percival does the cover A. I very much enjoy him and his work. Over on Dark Horse side, there's Star Wars that came out a few months ago is going into a fourth printing now.
Wow.
So Star Wars number 1 is going to be reavailable again. And then they have a couple other Star Wars books coming out. They have a miniseries, Darth Vader and the Ninth Assassin, number 1. And trade paperback, the Star Wars Knight Errant Volume 3, Escape, trade paperback. Over on DC side, we have our Gatefold Batman number 18. Oh, actually, no, I'm sorry. It's the second printing variant cover. My bad.
Right.
A new printing for Batman Year 100. Trade paperback, if you're a fan of Paul Pope. That. Then we have Batwoman number 19, which is going to have a regular fold-out cover and a variant mad cover. Interesting to see what that looks like.
Now, before you leave Batwoman, let me tell you that she actually made an appearance in Detective Comics, the number 19. She was there was things that have been going on in Batman Comics. His regular support cast won't help him. So who should show up? A Batwoman, which I thought was kind of thing. You'd be interested in that. Detective 19, of course, was actually the 900th issue of Detective Comics.
Yeah, it was a super big issue that came out.
Yeah.
Lots of different writers involved, was it?
There was two. There was the main writer and then James Tynion the IV,
right.
who wrote a thing that's going to lead into Talon.
Yeah. And then Dial H Volume 1 goes on sale, and I guess there's rumors that the series is going to end soon as well, too.
That never survives. They've tried it several times. I like this Dial H. It's something really quirky happened in the latest issue, which I won't talk about. I won't spoil for people if they haven't read it, but it's just a very interesting thing.
So apparently issue number 16 will be the last for that.
Ah, that's too bad.
We'll find out in the future whether that's true or not. Speaking of ending series, Frankenstein Agent of Shame Volume 2, Secrets of the Dead, trade paperback goes on sale. This has three issues that tie into the Rotworld universe as well, too. Mm-hmm. So the last half here of Frankenstein is available. Then we have our new He-Man and the Masters of the Universe number 1 on sale with a couple of covers. Justice League number 19 goes on sale. We have Justice League of America Vibe number 3. Is that any good?
It's okay. I like Justice League and Justice League of America. Vibe is kind of I know Geoff Johns really wants to have diversity, and so Vibe, of course, being a Hispanic character, you got to be really careful with these characters that you're not being what's the right word for this? You don't want him to be sort of racist and sort of and Mr. Johns, of course, is a good one for this, but I don't quite like the character at this point. He starts out as a teenager, and they bring him into the Justice League of America just because he's Hispanic, basically. And that bothers me. And he's kind of floundering around, not sure that he doesn't know if he wants to be a hero or not. I just kind of they got to get going on that one pretty soon, or I'm not going to be very interested.
Right.
So anyway, that's my take on that.
So we're over on the Dynamite section now. And we have Evil Ernie number 5, which has, let me count it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 covers.
Wow.
Total. A few of those are retailer incentives, but 8 covers total. Then we have, and this is for an issue 5, then we have The Shadow, Year 1, number 1 gets a variant cover. And then number 2, we have, let me count this one here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 covers.
Wow.
For The Shadow, Year 1, number 2, we have our Kevin Smith's Bionic Man, which has 3 covers. And then, I never heard of this till now, Robert Jordan's The Wheel of Time, The Eye of the World, number 34.
Yeah, that's been coming out. I bought a couple of them when they first came out, but I kind of lost interest. It's based on novels.
Right.
And I just didn't really feel grabbed by them. And so, and they also come out really regularly. That's the one of the bad parts.
Yeah, I mean, we're at issue number 34. I don't remember when issue number 1 through 33 came out.
It's been a while.
You know what probably is hurting this book? The lack of covers.
Yeah, there's only one.
There's only one cover. You're falling behind Evil Herbie and Arrow,
right.
Number 2.
I guess when you get to number 34, you don't get multiple covers.
I guess not. I guess at a certain point, they cut it out when you hit double digits. And then we have The Spider, number 11, which you get one cover.
Yeah, well, that's a great book. That's a book, if people aren't buying it, you should be. That's a good book.
Yes. Over on the IDW side, we have the Bernie Wrightson The Muck Monster Artist Edition Portfolio Hardcover. These portfolios are a bit cheaper than the regular large, you know, artist editions that they do. Mm-hmm. But even still, they do not have a price listed. You have to ask your retailer. Mm-hmm. The other artist edition they have is the Neil Adams Thrill Kill Artist Edition Portfolio Hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these are limited edition, so they're both actually interesting sounding.
Mm-hmm.
We have some Judge Dredd going on. We have the number 6 of the new series on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the complete Brian Bolland Volume 1 hardcover and label edition.
Wow.
It's your retailer because it's going to be hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
All right. As far as the tax, get a straight paperback.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, but we're kind of short on covers than usual.
Yeah.
Which only has 3 covers.
Yeah.
Remember, issues 1 and 2 had, like, I guess, at least 6.
Yeah,
So, yeah, I'll skip over what starts with an S.
Okay.
So that you can talk about that later.
Okay.
And then we have our Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Villain Micro Series number 1 for Cray on sale.
Mm-hmm.
Going to Image Comics, we have Chew number 33,
mm-hmm.
Cyber Force number 4, which, even though this is Ask Your Retailer, these are actually really cheap,
mm-hmm.
because I guess the retailers only have to pay shipping costs or whatever, and the books are designed to be free because they did a Kickstarter for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the Happy Trade Paperback
for
Grant Morrison's series, and Grant Morrison and Derek Robertson's series.
Mm-hmm.
So I have not picked up all the individual issues of Happy, so I may pick the one up.
It's a crazy book.
I'm sure it is. Over on the Marvel side, we have our Age of Ultron number 6 on sale.
Mm-hmm.
Cable and X... I mentioned this. There's a Cable and X-Force number 7.
Mm-hmm.
And of the regular covers, there is the Many Armors of Iron Man variant cover.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then mm-hmm. we get to Captain America number 6, which has a regular cover. And these are all done by, these variants are all done by different artists. We have a variant edition of the Many Armors of Iron Man variant edition.
Nah, you can tell that the Iron Man movie's coming out.
Yes. Iron Man number 8, which of course has the Many Armors of Iron Man variant edition.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to skip over the title that starts with a D.
Okay.
I'll mention the other one, though. There is a Daredevil Ends of Days number 7 of 8. On
mm-hmm.
sale, Marvel Masterworks, The Incredible Hulk, Volume 7, and then mm-hmm. there's a direct market variant edition as well, too, for the same price.
Mm-hmm.
We have our Superior Spider-Man number 8, which is Wayne's favorite book, of course. And Venom Devil's Pack trade paperback goes on sale.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it for me.
All right, let me start. I'll go reverse. Nova number 3, which is going to have a total creative change a couple issues in. A lot of these Marvel books, apparently, like within a year, are going to completely change their creative teams.
Right.
And Nova's going to be one that's going to change. Now, you were talking about the D-book. The D-book, of course, is Daredevil. And why Daredevil has a Many Armors of Iron Man variant cover, I don't know, except for the fact that the movie's coming out. That's the only thing I can figure. So that's coming out. Now, I do want to mention Age of Ultron number 6 is out of 10. There's only going to be about 4 more of that, and it'll be done.
Right.
And then we get to Image Comics, and they have something interesting. They have one of my very favorite books, Hoax Hunters number 9, which I really like. I've been trying to work out an interview with Michael Morrissey. Unfortunately, things haven't worked out with that. His schedule and my schedule never seem to mix, so that's going to be interesting. There's a book, and I don't understand what it's about, but it's called Miniature Jesus, number 1 of 5. I don't get what that's about. I always wonder, because we used to have there was one in D.C. that was a Jesus book.
Jesus.
Yeah, so Jesus apparently is getting, I guess with the success of the Bible TV series, I guess people are really diving into this stuff. But anyway, there's also the Robert Kirkman Thief of Thieves number 13.
Yes.
So that's good. Now,
still writing it. I thought at some point that someone else is going to take over writing.
He's kind of editing it, and they had Nick Spencer for a while, and he left, and another guy's writing it, but he's kind of editing it. So anyway, we get to IDW. Of course, the S comic is Star Trek number 20,
yeah,
which is going to continue on. This is going to be a big thing. I've got three covers on that one. Yeah. And then we move to the DW books. There's Doctor Who number 8. Doctor Who Prisoners of Time number 4 of 12, which should be the fourth Doctor. And they're putting those out as a part of the celebration of Doctor Who's 50th anniversary.
Right.
So, an interesting book so far. And then we get to DC, of course. You mentioned all the good ones, I think, in Dynamite. The Batman Beyond Unlimited number 15, which Adam Beechin now is leaving the book, and Kyle Higgins is over the writing of the Batman Beyond part. So that's going to be a change. Birds of Prey, Catwoman. There's the final issue of DC Universe Presents. There's also Green Lantern, New Guardians number 19. There's also going to be He-Man and the Masters of the Universe number 1, which you mentioned. I think that's kind of interesting because that's an old cartoon show coming back.
Sure.
Something related to that, Injustice Gods Among Us, they've got action figures coming out for that, the video game, which I find interesting. Legion number 19 with Keith Giffen. Martial Law hardcover, $50. Nightwing number 19 and Red Hood and the Outlaws number 19 are going on. Supergirl number 19. It might be the beginning of Mr. Michael Allen Nelson's run, which I hope so because I'm looking forward to his time on there. He's got some good ideas I think are going to be fun to do. Then Sword of Sorcery, which is coming to an end. This isn't the final issue, but it's coming. And Wonder Woman number 19, which continues to be pretty successful. Pretty happy with that. And as far as another one I really like from Dark Horse Comics, Black Beetle No Way Out. Number 3 of 4 is out, and I quite like that book. That's such a good book. Very pulp hero-like, and with an interesting story going on. One of the creators of the current Flash series in DC is behind it. Very good. Sometimes it's hard to get, but let me tell you something. It's worth the looking for. And that's all the books that I'm looking forward to. Anything else we should talk about before we call it quits?
No, not really.
Okay.
Hello, everybody. Major spoilers.
That's right. And on that note, we will come to a close for this week's news and previews. Thanks, Gianluca, and I hope you feel better soon.
Oh, thank you very much, Wade.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have an interview with Daniel Corey, the scripter for Moriarty, an interesting Image comic that's going to be coming out in hardcover. I'm sure you'll want to learn more about that. But until then, keep reading your comics.